Welcome, and thank you for standing by. All participants will be able to listen only until the question and answer portion of today's conference. To ask a question, please press star one. Today's conference is being recorded. If you have any objections, please disconnect at this time. I would now like to turn your conference over to Mr. John Leslie with NOAA's Office of Communication. Sir, you may begin.
Thank you very much. Good morning, everyone, and thank you for joining this monthly climate update call, which is part of the climate services NOAA provides to government, business, academia, and the public to support informed decision making. Today's update will feature three short presentations, followed by a question and answer session. I need to point out that we're having technical difficulties, so the presentations are not appearing online yet. But in the meantime, please send an email to Katie, that's K-A-T-Y dot Matthews with two T's, at NOAA.gov. Again, that's Katie dot Matthews at NOAA.gov, and she will send you those presentations. Our first presenter is Karen Gleason, climate scientist at NOAA's National Centers for Environmental Information, who will provide a summary of the April U.S. Climate Report and the Drought Monitor. Our second presenter is Brad Rippey, meteorologist from the Office of the Chief Economist at the U.S. Department of Agriculture, who will provide an overview of the impacts of recent weather across the U.S. on the national drought footprint and agriculture. And our last speaker is Stephen Baxter, a meteorologist at NOAA's Climate Prediction Center, who will provide the latest El Niño-La Niña update and the monthly and seasonal temperature and precipitation and drought outlooks for the next 3 months. So with that, we'll start with Karen Gleason from NOAA.
Thank you, John, and welcome everybody to the call today. Just as a point to note, we will not be leading off this presentation with the global highlights like we typically do, since they will not be available until this coming Monday on May 20th. So today I will focus on the conditions across the United States during April. All right, beginning with slide two, looking across the contiguous U.S. for the month of April, we see that the temperature average was 52.9 degrees Fahrenheit, which is approximately 2 degrees above our 20th century average. This means that for the month overall, it was an above average temperature month. Looking at the map on the left, if you happen to have the slides before you, we see the bulk of our much above average temperatures constrained to California, parts of the Southwest and the Four Corners, as well as across portions of Florida and the Mid-Atlantic states. In fact, for the state of Delaware, they experienced their second warmest April on record, and Maryland had their third warmest April. The above-average temperature conditions expand from the West Coast through the Rocky Mountains and into the Central Plains, as well as from Florida up through the Southeast, the Ohio Valley, and into the southern New England. Where you see the pockets of much above-average temperatures and above-average temperatures, we also see in our overnight low temperatures, which are typically our minimum temperatures, we see the footprint of those extremes much larger, meaning that our overnight low temperatures are warmer and outpace our daytime high temperatures, which is consistent with what we've seen in recent months and recent years. Moving over to the map on the right, our precipitation percentiles map for the month of April, we see that on average for the contiguous U.S., 3.17 inches of precipitation fell, which is 0.65 inches above the 20th century average. This falls into our much above average category and actually ranks as the 10th or the 12th wettest such month on record. Looking specifically at the map, we see pockets of record rainfall and much above average precipitation. Focused on Oregon and Idaho, as well as parts of Texas and Louisiana and the lower Mississippi Valley, up through the Appalachian Mountains and into New England. In fact, Oregon experienced their third wettest April on record, and Idaho and Vermont had their sixth wettest April. Pockets of below average and much below average precipitation occurred across California, other parts of the Southwest, and a focal point is in the Central Plains in eastern Colorado, Nebraska, and Kansas. We've been wet for several months now in a row, and if you take a look at the most recent 12-month period, which is May of 2018 to April of 2019, we see that that period is the wettest 12-month period on record now, as well as the wettest 12-month period for any 12-month period on record. So it has been extremely wet over a large portion of the contiguous U.S. All right, moving on to the next slide, slide number 3, we take a quick look at Alaska for both April and then year-to-date. Temperature-wise, Alaska averaged a little more than 5 degrees Fahrenheit above average, which is the 10th warmest April on record. This comes after an extreme warm March that blew a lot of records out of the water. For the year-to-date, that March influence brings Alaska for January through April up to second warmest January through April on record, with a departure from average of about 9 degrees Fahrenheit. Kotzebue, which is on the northwest coast, the coastal town, they had their warmest April on record, and this is most likely influenced in large part by the lack of sea ice extent across the Bering Sea, which again for the second month in a row was second lowest on record. Looking at the map on the left, which is our percentiles map, we see that much above average conditions occurred across most of Alaska, with record warmth in the northern and western portions of the state, as well as in parts of the Aleutians. Utqiagvik, I hope I said that right, which is also known as Barrow, they had their warmest January through April on record, and ironically, the previous record was set last year, and this year exceeded it by nearly an entire degree Fahrenheit. All right, moving on to slide number 4, we take a look at the current U.S. drought monitor, which is updated weekly, and at the present time, 2.4% of the contiguous U.S. is in drought, which is down about 2.5% from late March. We see improvements across parts of New Mexico and Texas in the southeast, and moderate drought expanded across the state of Washington. Looking outside of the contiguous U.S., we saw some drought improvements across portions of Hawaii. And looking at the U.S.-affiliated Pacific Islands, we see the Mariana Islands and the parts of the Marshall Islands entrenched in extreme and exceptional drought. All right, moving along to slide number 5, since I cannot speak to the global statistics this month, I wanted to highlight the active tropical cyclone season we've seen across the Indian Ocean. So this is sort of a two-part slide. So the first image on the left is Tropical Cyclone Fani, which made landfall in India on the 3rd of May. At landfall, it was the equivalent of what we would consider a very strong Category 4 hurricane, and it's considered to be one of the most intense cyclones to hit this part of the world in the last 20 years for the region. Looking at the two images on the right, Cyclone Idai, which made landfall in Mozambique in March, and Kenneth, which made landfall in northern Mozambique at the end of April, this is the first time since the year 2000 in which two cyclones have hit Mozambique in the same tropical cyclone season, and the northern part of Mozambique has not seen in the satellite era, which is an extensive period of time at this point, they have not seen a landfalling tropical cyclone. So most people that live in these parts, this was a new thing for them. And in all, there was over $1 billion estimated in damages between these two cyclones. And in the Southwest Indian Ocean for this season, 2018-2019, so far there have been 15 storms and 10 cyclones, which is tied with the record season back in 1993-94. And with that, I will turn it over to Brad.
All right. Thank you, Karen. And I will be starting on slide 6 for those of you who have been able to obtain a copy of the presentation. And Karen, I know you mentioned some details about U.S. drought, but I'm going to dig a little bit deeper into it. And, of course, you mentioned that 2.4% of the contiguous United States is in drought as of this morning's release of the latest U.S. drought monitor. And we are hovering very close to a record low drought coverage in the 20-year history of the U.S. drought monitor. We actually saw drought coverage dropping just a little bit lower 3 weeks ago, dipping as low as 2.3% in late April, and just a very slight increase since then. Now, looking at the 20-year history, which is mapped on slide 6, you can see that the previous record was set back in May of 2017 when we had drought coverage of about 4.5%. And I should point out on this slide, this shows not only drought, our four categories of drought, D1 through D4, but it also has the yellow, which is D0, not considered drought. So that might explain the discrepancies in what you're seeing and the percentages versus, you know, looking across there. And just for reference, our record high drought coverage in the 20-year history of the drought monitor was just under two-thirds of the country in drought, 65.5%. Back in September 2012. So we've seen a nice little decline, overall decrease, net decrease over the last several years in overall drought coverage in the U.S. Moving ahead to slide 7, well, since we don't have too much to talk about in the way of drought, maybe we should shift the focus a little bit to wetness here. And again, kind of expounding on what Karen already talked about, we have seen this overarching wet pattern, continental scale wetness, over the last year. And so, like long-term droughts, long-term wet spells don't just happen overnight. And so the buildup to the wetness we've seen this spring has been very impressive over the last year. So these continental scale long-term wet spells do typically result from sustained storminess, persistent weather patterns. And looking at the left slide on, or the left graphic on slide 7, you can see it has been record wet over the last 12 months, May 2018 to April 2019, across large parts of the Central Plains, Upper Midwest, as well as the Ohio Valley and the Mid-Atlantic parts of the Appalachians. Now, sometimes we do see powerful individual storms embedded within this overall wet pattern, such as the mid-March storm that brought all the flooding to Nebraska and Iowa and South Dakota. And that's just part of the overall pattern. Now, on the right side, you can see the amount of precipitation that has fallen going back to the late 19th century during these all May to April time periods. And as Karen pointed out, it is the not only the wettest 12-month such period, May to April, but for all 12-month periods, which is even more impressive. And we have seen an average of 36.2 inches of precipitation across the contiguous United States over that May to April period, May 2018 to April 2019, at 6.25 inches above the 20th century mean. Now, moving ahead to slide 8, this has had a real world impact on agriculture in the form of extremely slow planting progress and crop developmental delays so far this spring in the United States. The graphic here is corn planting progress. The upper number indicates the amount of corn that was planted by May 12, 2019. The lower number in brackets shows how that compares to the five-year average. So in the darker brown states, South Dakota, Minnesota, and then Illinois, Indiana, and Ohio, we are at least 40 percentage points behind the respective state five-year averages for May 12th. Illinois, particularly impressive, just 11% of the intended corn acreage planted by May 12th. That compares to the five-year average of 82%, 71 points behind average. Nationally, less than a third of the U.S. corn, 30%, planted by May 12th. Five-year average is 66%. And if you look at the last three decades, the slowest corn planting progress as of May 12th, we've got three other comparable years. The flood year of 1993, just 27% had planted by May 12th that year. 2013, just 6 years ago, we did have some very slow planting progress up through mid-May and then rapid progress after that point, 28% planted that year by May 12th. 1995, another very wet spring, 31% planted by May 12th. That year, interestingly, we got hit by heat and drought in July and August of 1995. Those planting delays on slide 9, you can see, extend to many other crops, including soybeans and spring wheat. And in fact, just about every part of the country except the southern Atlantic states have experienced significant planting delays so far this year. For soybeans, other years where we've seen less than a tenth of the intended soybean acreage planted by May 12th were 1993, 1995, 1996, and 2013. And as you can see, just 9% of the soybeans planted by May 12th, and that is 20 percentage points behind the five-year average pace. Now, just in the last few days, we have seen a little bit of a window for planting starting to open up, first in the Northwest, and then more recently across the Great Plains and even the Western Corn Belt. But as we speak, there are new storms starting to push inland from the Pacific. That window will be closing from west to east over the next few days. Now, there are some benefits to all this excessive wetness. And so, for example, one point here is that if you're sitting in most areas of the country, you look out the window, you've got some pretty green grass, or your backyard is looking pretty good right now. But that does extend to agriculture. We see U.S. rangeland and pastures currently rated 63% in good to excellent condition. And if you compare that to the last three decades, there are only 3 years really comparable for that percent good to excellent this time of year. That's 1998, 1999, and 2010. So we're very close to a record for good to excellent pasture ratings for this time of year. And with that, I'll turn it over to the outlook section of our talk.
Thanks, Brad. So I'll get started talking a little bit about sea surface temperatures and this current state of El Niño, La Niña, and then we'll transition to the monthly, seasonal, and drought outlooks, respectively. So I'm on slide 10 here, and we're looking at this top panel on the left is the latest sea surface temperature anomalies or departures from climatology for the past 4 weeks average, so about the past month. And a couple of features I'll highlight are the continued above normal sea surface temperatures across the equatorial Pacific basin, consistent with El Niño conditions that continue into this month. Likewise, there are above normal SSTs, quite exceptionally so, across parts of the Northeast Pacific, extending into the Bering Sea. We saw how warm Alaska's been recently, and sea ice continues to be below normal across parts of western and northwestern Alaska, and that will help continue the above normal temperatures as we go into the upcoming month and season. In the North Atlantic, we have this interesting, we call this a tripole structure, but you can see the below normal temperatures, sea surface temperatures across parts of the North Atlantic, and then in the kind of near 30 north, in the mid-latitude Atlantic, you have above normal sea surface temperatures. And then we get down off the west coast of Africa, extending across the tropical and subtropical Atlantic Ocean. There's, again, this other weakness there. That's kind of an interesting signal that we sometimes see on kind of longer time scales, and it can have impacts, especially on the Atlantic hurricane season, but amongst other things. So it's something interesting that climate scientists look at. But looking at the ENSO forecast specifically for the El Niño, it's favored to persist with about a 55 to 60% likelihood into winter time, so DJF, December, January, February, 2019-2020. And any transition to La Niña is decidedly unlikely. Coming out of El Niño events, and we've kind of been in a weak El Niño event into this calendar year, sometimes we do observe in the climate record quite frequently transitions to La Niña from El Niño. That's not something that is likely at all this year, given the current state of the tropical Pacific. So I'll continue on here to slide 11 with the June forecast, temperature on the left, precipitation on the right. And one of the things that's showing up in a lot of our forecast tools, both from dynamical models but as well as empirical tools that we use, is a tendency toward below normal temperatures, rather, across much of the central plains, in some part coinciding with an area where we expect above normal precipitation. That area is kind of centered in the central Rockies, parts of the Great Basin, and extends into the southern high plains. Along both coasts, the west and east coast, there's a slight tilt towards above normal temperatures. And if you look over Alaska, you can see that's where we're most confident for above normal temperatures. And that's in part due to ongoing sea surface temperature anomalies and sea ice anomalies in that vicinity. This is a pretty interesting pattern in that relative to long-term trends, the forecast over much of the CONUS the contiguous United States is colder than we've seen in recent years overall, but somewhat consistent with the recent periods where we've had a lot of cold air outbreaks across much of the central U.S., and that goes all the way back into January and February of 2019. Likewise, the wet pattern that we've observed across much of the central U.S. is expected to continue into June, but also into the seasonal forecast as a whole, which I'll start talking about here on slide 12. We're actually pretty excited about this forecast in the sense that, you know, for a warm season forecast, there's quite a bit to talk about, and largely anchored by the ongoing El Nino event. And this El Nino event is somewhat unique in that it is kind of peaking in amplitude or forecast peaking amplitude in the beginning of the wet of the warm season. And typically this time of year is a transition season for the ENSO system. And so the fact that we're kind of in a mature weak to moderate event forecast through the upcoming warm season, this does give some potentially unique chances of predictability here. And so you have the above-normal precipitation centered over the central Rockies there, fairly expansive area that extends down to the southern plains and then with a weak extension toward the mid-Atlantic coast. Likewise with temperature, we have a very large area favoring below-normal temperatures, and this is really favoring the colder side of our forecast guidance. And a lot of that is based on the expectation of the impact of antecedent soil moisture. So when you have these very wet soils across much of the central U.S., that tends to partition incoming solar energy more towards what we call latent heating, or the evaporation of soil, of water in the soils, as opposed to actually heating up the soil in the associated and the overlying atmosphere. And so the result is that this tends to have a suppressing impact on summertime temperatures. And so we're really playing that up early in the warm season here as we head into June, July, August. If you look at our later leads, that effect is expected to taper as we head toward late summer and especially into autumn. But this is nonetheless a pretty relatively cool forecast, especially relative to long-term trends. Even in parts of the Rockies where you have above-normal temperatures, those odds of above-normal temperatures are lower than we would have seen in recent years, again, due in part to the effects of above-normal precipitation across the Rockies. Likewise, Alaska favoring warmer and wetter conditions than normal, consistent with long-term trends that were observed there. Finally, I'll just transition here to the U.S. drought outlook. On slide 13, and as we heard about from Brad, drought is at a historic low in the history of the U.S. Drought Monitor, and so the drought outlook, which is going to emphasize areas where we're favoring either persistence, improvement, removal, or development of drought, there's not a lot of areas to persist, improve, or remove because there's not a lot of ongoing drought. But the few areas where there is some ongoing drought, one area is over parts of the Southwest, mainly New Mexico. That area is expected to see improvement based on our forecast. An interesting area where there could be some degradation is over the Northwest, where it's been fairly dry, and we're forecasting a slight tilt towards below-normal precipitation heading into summer, which is already a drier time of year, and that can be compounded by the expectation of a slight tilt towards above-normal temperatures for the upcoming season. Also in the Southeast, there's been a dry period of late there, and that's been a kind of difficult forecast area. There's not really a dry season in the Southeast, but with forecast precipitation not showing a strong signal or strong difference from climatology, the consensus there amongst the drought outlook team was to keep that the forecast drought mainly persisting there but not developing around it. So not too much of a strong signal there either way in the Southeast. Over parts of Hawaii, you can see some development likely as well with a slightly dry forecast early and the expectation of some of that drought continuing to worsen. And then over the southeast part of Alaska, over the Alaska Panhandle, there is some further development expected where there has been a drier than normal period over southeast Alaska. And again, we don't have any strong signals there early heading into a drier time of year there. As the northern hemisphere storm tracks break down relative to their kind of cold season peak. All right, so that's my last slide, and with that, I will turn it back to John.
All right, Steve, thank you very much. For those who may have joined us late, I do need to point out that we were having technical difficulties earlier, and so the speakers, their presentations were not showing online. But in the meantime, if you don't have them, please email Katie, that's K-A-T-Y, dot Matthews with two T's, katie.matthews@noaa.gov, and she will get those presentations to you. All right, now we're at the point where we can take questions from the audience. So please identify your affiliation and who you'd like to answer the question. Operator, at this time, could you please remind everyone how they can ask a question and queue up the first one?
Thank you, sir. If you would like to ask a question, please press star 1, and you will be prompted to record your first and last name. To withdraw your question, press star 2. Our first question comes from Brian Sullivan with Bloomberg News. Your line is open.
Hi. I just wanted to know if there's a fingerprint for climate change and all the wetness you've been seeing. And also, you know, I see that you're expecting it to continue out through the summer. Is there any indication that it will break at some point?
Hi, this is Steve at CPC. Let me jump on some of that. What I will say is, since we've been issuing forecasts in 1995, generally speaking, we do observe now relative to the fixed climatology, and we use a trailing 30-year climatology. So right now we're in the 1981-2010 climatology. What we do observe as we go through that period is that there is a slight tilt toward above normal precipitation that we observe in, you know, relative to normal. So. Meaning that above normal tends to verify more than below normal, just slightly so over the entire CONUS. But that has a pretty strong regional there are very strong regional differences there. And so over in the warm season, interestingly enough, we tend to observe a wetter trend over the Northeast and parts of the Great Lakes and Midwest to some extent. But there's actually some drying trend over parts of the Northern Rockies and the interior Northwest. What's interesting about this ongoing signal is that putting that together, you can say that over parts of the Rockies especially, this signal's being driven a little bit more, certainly more by the interannual footprint. So the idea that we're having the El Nino event in the Pacific and the structure of SSTs and the forecast circulation pattern over the East Pacific and Western North America does favor above normal precipitation farther northeast of the traditional monsoon maximum. As you get into kind of the cold season, looking at observations, there is we also observe this in the sense that you have this northward shift in the mean storm track. And so if you look at wintertime precipitation trends, you tend to see that a little bit with some drying tendency across the south and then a wetter tendency across, you know, farther north across parts of the Northeast and the upper Midwest. I think, you know, Karen can, if she wants to field kind of a bigger climate change perspective on this, I would invite her to do that.
Thanks, Stephen. This is Karen. I would just say that there certainly are elements here where we expect to see when we have precipitation events, we anticipate that we will see a greater frequency or number of events that have like heavy precipitation or heavy rainfall rates. That's to be expected. But when you look at the course of 2018 and throughout, I know in particular throughout much of the Southeast, there were a lot of state records set for the whole year, the whole calendar year, and it wasn't necessarily one or two events. I know Florence was a huge rain soaker. Michael was big in the south. But the whole year there were change points and like stair steps and accumulations of precipitation. So there really isn't any one event. It just happened to be a very wet 12-month period. And like I said, we do anticipate seeing as we move into the future precipitation events that might have heavier precipitation within a single event. So certainly there could be some signal there.
Mm-hmm. Thank you.
Once again, to ask a question, please press star 1. One moment. I'm showing no questions.
Okay, well, if there are no further questions, we'll go ahead and wrap up the call. First, I want to thank all of the speakers for their time and to everyone else for participating in this conference call. I'm going to end by reminding you to please mark your calendar for some important upcoming releases. The April release of the Global Climate Highlights will be on May 20th. The 2019 Atlantic Hurricane Outlook will be released on May 23rd. The May release of the U.S. Climate Highlights will be on June 6th. And the May release of the Global Climate Highlights will be on June 18th. And finally, an audio file of this call will be posted on the NOAA.gov Media Advisory website later today. And of course, if you have any further informational needs, don't hesitate to email me at john.leslie@noaa.gov, and my contact information is also available at the top of the media advisory. So that concludes today's call. Thank you again for joining in.
Thank you for your participation. You may disconnect at this time. Speakers, please stand by for the post conference.